second, dropping to his knees and holding both hands to his throat while everybody else ran up the court after Daryl Mullins made his jumper. "Hey!" Richie yelled to Tony, the ref closest to the play. "What was that?" Tony saw Danny on his knees then, but made a quick gesture with his hands over his eyes. It was his way of telling Richie he hadn't seen what had happened. Then he blew his whistle, stopping play. Richie knelt down next to Danny. "You okay?" He swallowed hard, the inside of his throat feeling as if he were swallowing tacks.
"I'm okay."
"I'm taking you out."
"No."
"You sure?"
"Yeah."
"Hey," Richie said, putting both hands on his shoulders, looking him straight in the eye. "Just play, okay? No payback, at least for now." Danny nodded. 2 minutes to go. Vikings ball. Everybody on their team except Ty was goofing around now, doing whatever they wanted on offense, shooting from wherever they wanted to, making showboat passes, even though Mr. Ross kept making a show out of being pissed and telling them to run their stuff. Danny noticed Ty giving warning looks to Teddy a couple of times, like he was saying, "Cut the crap," but Teddy ignored him. Jack Hardy, who hardly ever took a long outside shot, decided to fire one up from 20 feet. Danny and Teddy ended up underneath, each trying to get position to get the rebound. Ty was there too, already having the inside position on Will. While everybody was looking up for the ball, Teddy gave Danny another elbow, this one in the side. Enough, Danny decided. More than enough. The ball had hit the back of the rim and bounced straight up in the air, as high as the top of the backboard. As it did, Danny got a leg in front of Teddy Moran, planted it good and solid, and, as he did, used perfect rebounding position, elbows out, to shove Teddy hard to the side, his left elbow like a roundhouse punch into Teddy's rib cage. It knocked Teddy off balance, made him stumble to his left, just as Ty Ross, who had gone high up in the air when the ball had finally stopped bouncing around on the rim, was coming down with the rebound. Danny saw it all happening like it was super slow-mo on television, or in a video game. Only, this wasn't fantasy ball. This was Ty landing on Teddy instead of the basketball floor at St. Pat's. This was Ty Ross, not just the best 12-year-old player in town, but the most graceful, the one who never made a false move on the court, rolling over Teddy's back, the ball flying out of his hands, nothing to break his fall as he landed hard on his right wrist, his shooting wrist, with a crack on the floor that sounded like a firecracker going off. Then Ty was rolling on the floor at St. Pat's, cradling his right arm to his stomach, screaming in pain. Chapter 14. There was a secret place in his room, next to his closet, the wall hidden behind the poster of Jason Kidd. It was where Danny had been measuring himself for a long time, where he could check the progression he had made, say, between February 26th of fourth grade to October 16th of fifth grade. He would use a pen, afraid pencil marks would fade over time or disappear, writing the date and the year, hoping there'd be 1 year where he'd see the growth spurt Dr. Corville kept promising him. Only the growth spurt never came. The lines just kept crawling their way up the wall. Danny Walker was fast everywhere, except here. He would carefully untape the poster when it was time to make another entry, lay it flat on his bed, take his place next to the door frame, reach back, put the pen flat on his head, and point it toward the wall, make another line. He never cheated. Not even on September 17th of this year, a couple of weeks after he started school, when he was desperate to break the 55-inch mark he'd hit back in July. Except he didn't break the speed limit that day, or on October 2nd, or October 14th. His mom called him a streak of light, and he even thought of himself as a streak of light sometimes when he was flying up the court, but he kept moving his way up the wall like an inchworm. Now he took the kid poster down when he got back from the Vikings scrimmage, stared at all the lines and all the dates. The only progress he could see was that his penmanship was improving as he got older, and thought about measuring himself for the first time since October. Instead, he just sat in the beanbag chair Ty had been sitting in the other day, feeling smaller than ever. trying to squeeze his eyes shut so that he would stop seeing Ty lying there on the floor, rocking from side to side on his back, his injured hand not leaving his stomach. Only closing his eyes didn't help. He kept seeing Ty and hearing the voice of Teddy Moran.
"You happy now?"
Teddy had said in the gym after it happened. This was after Mr. Ross had decided not to wait for an ambulance and to take Ty to Valley General Hospital, just outside of town on Route 37, himself. The two of them had walked slowly out of the gym, Mr. Ross with his arm around Ty's shoulder, Ty holding his right hand in front of him with his left, the left hand shaking so bad you wondered why he even bothered.
"You couldn't have a real season for yourself, so you had to wreck ours?"
Teddy yelled at Danny when the Rosses were gone. In a voice the size of a penny, Danny said, "It was an accident." Not even sure why he was saying anything back to him.
"He shoved me into him,"
Teddy said, addressing the rest of the Vikings now, not dropping the sound of his own voice one bit. Most of the Vikings were still there, along with some of the parents who'd shown up a few minutes early for pickups. Teddy pointed right at Danny and said,
"He did this to Ty." "It was an accident, you moron,"
Will finally said.
"It was,"
Danny said again.
"You keep telling yourself that, little man,"
Teddy said to Danny.
"You tried to get me and you got Ty instead. Does that make you feel big?"
"I didn't mean to,"
Danny said. He was going to say something else then, something that would explain what had happened to the Vikings, to their parents, to the Warriors, maybe to himself. Except his throat closed up suddenly, the way it had when Teddy got him in the neck with his elbow, and he started to feel his eyes fill up, and no words would come out. He felt his dad's hand on his elbow. "I'll run you home," he said.
"Nice team,"
Teddy said now to both of them.
"Shut up, kid,"
Richie said. Teddy's father, Garland, was standing next to him. Garland Moran had the same pinched face as his son, same pig eyes, just an adult version.
"Hey," he said. "You can't talk to my son like that."
"You ought to try it once in a while," Richie said.
"It might teach him some manners."
Then father and son began walking out of the gym, but not before Teddy hit Danny with one more sucker punch.
"He actually told me you were his friend, Walker."
Danny didn't turn around, kept walking toward the front doors, wanting to run. Now he felt as if Teddy's words had chased him all the way to his room. He got out of the beanbag chair, that move taking as much effort as his dad usually showed getting out of a chair, took a pen off his desk, put a mark about an inch above the floorboard, and the date. "You're as big as you think you are," his mom always told him. "You're as big as you feel." He was in his room the next afternoon, lying there on his bed and listening to the Jets game on the radio, instead of watching it downstairs, content to stay there by himself until it was time to go to high school.
"Hey there," his mom said, standing in the doorway. "It's my solitary man."
"Huh?"
"Another old song."
Danny turned down the volume on the radio when it was clear she was staying, that she was there for a mom talk.
"I just got off the phone with Lily Ross," she said.
He waited.
"It turns out he only broke one bone in the wrist," she said. "So that's pretty good news, right?"
"Wow," he said. "A broken arm. That's great news, Mom."
"You know what I mean," she said.
"Your father thought it could have been much worse, just because of the way he landed and the pain you guys said he was in. The doctor told Lily that some Jets quarterback had a wrist injury in about the same spot a few years ago. Not some quarterback, Chad Pennington. And broke four bones and had some ligament damage. They operated on him that time. Did they operate on Ty?"
Allie Walker nodded.
"To put a pin in there, he'll be in a cast for a while." Danny sat up on the bed.
"How long?"
"They'd only be guessing."
"Okay, what was Mrs. Ross's best guess?"
"She didn't talk about how long he'd be in the cast, just that the whole healing process was going to take at least 3 months. Probably closer to four. November, December, January. Back in February. Maybe." The official Tri-Valley League season, Danny knew, started the first week of January and lasted until the middle of February. The tournament was the last week of February.
So if Ty was lucky, he could get a game or two in before the tournament.
So he'll be able to play again this season? Danny said.
His mom said, she didn't say that. The doctor reminded her that they just needed to keep their fingers crossed, and that if everything went well, he might be able to play again this season, as long as he is convinced, this is Dr. Marshall, the orthopedic surgeon talking, that there is no chance of Ty re-injuring himself. Danny let himself deadfall back on his pillow, staring up at the Stockton poster. He might be able to play. If not, he'll be ready for baseball.
Yippee.
Might be able to play is better than won't be able to play. Danny said,
you think I could maybe call him?
Allie Walker didn't say anything. Danny raised his head back up off the pillow, repeated himself as if she hadn't heard him the first time.
Mom, you think I could call Ty?
Maybe you ought to wait a couple of days. Lily said he doesn't want to talk to anybody right now, including his own parents.
You think it would be all right to email him?
There was another pause, not as long as the one before, and she said,
why don't you just wait on that, too?
Danny said, he blames me, doesn't he?
Honey, I think he's just hurting in general.
She came over and sat on the end of the bed.
And you're hurting.
I'm fine.
You want to talk about this?
No, he said,
but I can see you do.
I thought it might be better if you just talked it out a little instead of sitting up here and brooding about it.
Actually, I've been partying.
It was an accident, she said.
How much did that help Dad?
Danny said. He learned the hard way, she said. Accidents happen in life. Sometimes they just happen, and nobody's to blame.
Somebody was to blame this time, Danny said.
Chapter 15. The week after Thanksgiving, Richie Walker stopped by the house, saying that the Port Madison Pacers had dropped out of the Tri-Valley at the last second. It turned out only 7 kids showed up for their original tryouts, and then 3 of them decided they wanted to play hockey instead. When they had a second tryout, only 2 more 7th graders showed up, at which point the Port Madison Basketball Association surrendered. Richie Walker said he'd just gotten a call from the league telling him that, and also telling him the Warriors could take Port Madison's place as the Tri-Valley's 8th team. I had the check ready, the paperwork, the insurance forms, he said, sounding pretty proud of himself. I had already scheduled some games I hadn't told you about yet, against some other Tri-Valley teams. They said I could pick up the rest I needed from Port Madison, use as much of their league schedule as I wanted, and a few non-league games before Christmas if I wanted them.
Do we play the Vikings? Danny said.
No, his dad said. We just needed 12 official league games. We can play the 6 teams besides them twice, and that's enough. He looked at Danny and said, I didn't see any point.
But we could see them in the playoffs, right? Doesn't everybody make the playoffs?
8 teams, 3 rounds, like you're starting with the quarterfinals. Yeah, if it falls right, we could play them in the playoffs. Depending on what our record is. And theirs. They'll be pretty good, even without Ty, I figure.
I can figure what our record's gonna be.
Richie grabbed him by the arm, turning him slightly. The grip on his arm wasn't enough to hurt, just enough to let Danny know his dad meant business. He said, I want you to stop feeling so sorry for yourself. I mean it. Grow up, for Christ's sakes.
I wasn't...
Yeah, you were. You're feeling sorry for yourself today. You've been feeling sorry for yourself at practice. You've been feeling sorry for yourself since you got cut from the Vikings. And I want you to snap out of it. Or... It was like he'd come to a stop sign.
Or what? Danny said, feeling some anger of his own now. You're gonna quit? And leave?
Richie looked down and realized he still had Danny by the arm. Let him go. I'm not quitting on you this time, his dad said. All I'm asking is that you don't quit on me.
Just being honest about the team, Danny said.
Aren't you the one who always says you are what your record says you are in sports? It's an old Bill Parcells line, his dad said. But we don't have a record yet.
Right.
You gotta trust me on something, Richie said. We're gonna get better as we go. Swear to God.
Oh, like you've got a master plan?
I gave up on plans a long time ago, he said.
The sad look came back then. It's like your mom says, you want to make God laugh? Tell him about your plans. They both had calmed down now. Sat there talking their common language, basketball, Richie telling him he was going to press more and feature Colby more, and that he'd even told Matt's dad that he was willing to work with him alone a couple of times a week. I was on a team once they said made magic around here, Richie Walker said. It's time to make some again. In the 2 weeks after the Warriors-Vikings scrimmage, Danny had left one message on the Ross's answering machine using Will's cell during recess one day, even though it was against the rules at St. Pat's. He wanted to do it during school because he knew Mr. Ross would be at the bank and Mrs. Ross would probably be doing her volunteer work at the hospital. Ty hadn't called back. A couple of nights later, Danny tried email and instant messaging when he saw that Ty was online. He got zip in response. On Thursday after school, he and Will had gone into town just to goof around. When they had gone past Runyon's, Danny had seen his dad at the end of the bar, a glass of beer in front of him, staring up at what must have been a rerun of a college basketball game played the night before, since it was only 5:30 in the afternoon. Ty was back at school, Danny knew that, but he hadn't seen him at the candy kitchen on weekends. Hadn't run into him at the Middletown-Morrisville football game the weekend after Thanksgiving, even though he was hoping he would. The next Friday, while waiting for his mom, Danny had even used his old hiding place on the stage while the Vikings practiced, just to see if Ty might be hanging around with them, fooling around with his left hand, maybe. He never showed up. The next day at Twin Forks, they lost 47-22, and didn't score a point in the fourth quarter. On Sunday, they lost 50-20 at Morrisville. They never had a chance in either game, no matter how much switching Richie did with the defenses, no matter how many different lineups he tried, even though he had them pressing all over the court until the end. At one point against Morrisville, Danny said to his dad coming out of a huddle, why are we still pressing? Because it's the kind of team we have to be? Even though we're not even close to being that team yet? Afraid so. Does that make any sense? To me it does. Then his dad gave him a push, like, just get out there and play. He played hard until the end, doing what he was always doing, which meant looking for Colby Daines every chance he got, the girl on the team being the only one he could pass it to and not be more scared than he was of spiders. Danny and Will Stoddard were at the water fountain together when the Morrisville game was over. For once, Will talked in a voice only Danny could hear. "Remember how your pop said we were going to be the team nobody wanted to play?" Will said. Danny said, yeah, he remembered. "Well, he was slightly off," Will said. "We're going to be the team everybody wants to play." Chapter 16. Their next practice wasn't until Tuesday night at 9. Richie Walker, who was never late when basketball was involved, didn't show up until 9:10. Danny had gotten them into layup lines by then, using his own official NBA ball, his Spalding, last year's Christmas present, by mail, from his dad. When they saw his dad come walking through the double doors, dragging his bag of balls, Will said, "Hey, Coach, we figured you finally deserted." Richie said, "How about we have a new policy tonight? More playing and less talking." Will, stung, said, "Hey, Coach, I was just saying. Know something, Will? You're always just saying." Danny, careful not to let his dad see him staring at him, watched him go to half court and sit in the folding chair Ms. Perry from the girls' team had left there. Danny had seen him mad before, usually because of something that happened between him and Danny's mom. Danny'd get sent to his room and then the yelling would start. When he was younger, before he wanted to know exactly what was making them that mad, before he would eavesdrop at the top of the stairs, before he even had music to play or headphones to wear, he would just get on his bed and put pillows over his head until it stopped. Until it was over. It was part of it all, being their son, being the son of their divorce, the part he didn't like to dwell on very much. Adults got mad sometimes, that was the deal. They yelled sometimes. And kids figured out pretty early that there wasn't one blinking thing they could do about it. There was really no point in trying, the way there was no point in trying to figure it. The way there was no point in Danny trying to figure what had pissed off his dad before he got to the gym tonight. A few minutes after Richie arrived, he yelled from the chair that they weren't going to start scrimmaging until they could make 5 straight layups with their off hands. It meant left hand for everybody on the team except Oliver Towne, who was left-handed. When they couldn't manage that after a couple of trips through the line, he said, fine, they could run some suicides. Maybe that would improve their layup shooting. Suicides. Get on the baseline, run and touch the floor at the free throw line extended. Back to the baseline. Then run and touch the half-court line. Come back. Then to the other free throw line. And back. Finally, the whole length of the court, and back. Every kid who'd ever played basketball would rather sing in the chorus or go to the dentist than run suicides. Matt and Oliver Towne finished last. Richie made them run another one. While they did, Will made the mistake of saying something to Bren, and Bren made the even bigger mistake of laughing. Richie made them run another suicide, since they thought suicides were so funny. When they were finished, Richie got out of the chair, slowly and carefully, as always. Tin Man and the Wizard of Oz. You know why this team looked like a joke this weekend? He said. Because you guys treat it like a joke, that's why. The Warriors were stretched out in a line in front of him. Will and Bren still had their hands on their knees from running. Richie said, Will and Bren, look at me when I'm talking to you! Like he'd snapped them both with a towel. They jerked their heads up. The worst crime in sports isn't losing, Richie said. It's not competing. In my whole life, I've never been associated with a team that didn't want to compete, and I'm sure not going to start now. Now go out and let me see a real team. Danny wanted to say, make sure you tell us if you see it first. There was only a half hour left for them to scrimmage, because they had to be out of the gym by 10. Richie spent most of it yelling. Yelled, Danny thought, like every bad kids coach he'd ever heard, in travel or rec leagues or at summer camp. Apparently yelled so much he had to keep going to the water fountain. One time when he did, Will whispered to Danny, Did he, like, forget we're 12? Right before they finished, just a few minutes left, Matt Fitzgerald cut one way when Colby thought he was going to cut the other, and she threw a pass out of bounds. Come on, Colby, Richie said. It was the first time he'd ever even come close to saying something in a mean voice to her. Get your head in the game. Colby took it better than he would have, maybe better than any of the boys in the gym would have. She didn't look down. She didn't look away. She didn't try to make excuses. All she said was, Sorry, coach. No, you're not, he said. Everybody else on the court had stopped now and was looking at Richie. So was Allie Walker, standing with her arms crossed just inside the double doors to the gym. Richie saw her, too. That's it for tonight, he said. Shoot around until your parents come. Danny looked at his mom, still staring holes through his dad. She stayed where she was, nodding to the other parents who seemed to have showed up all at once for pickup, while Danny kept shooting free throws at one of the side baskets. Richie made a big show of collecting the balls as he tried to keep his distance from her. Finally, though, it was just the Walker family in the gym. Richie said, I didn't know you were picking him up tonight. I was on my way home from book club. Well then, see you Thursday, he said to Danny, and slung the ball bag over his shoulder and started moving slowly, shuffling the way he did when he was tired, toward the door. She still hadn't moved. Rich, she said, I'd like a word with you. Danny, go wait in the car. And I mean in the car. He walked out to the parking lot, carrying his ball, knowing his mom was watching him through the doors. When he got to the car, he turned around, waved, saw her close the door. He waited 2 minutes and then snuck back. He carefully closed the front door, walked through the foyer, got on his toes, peeked through one of the windows in the double doors. They were standing close to each other in front of the stage. Danny cracked open one of the doors just slightly, praying that it wouldn't make some creaking noise that would be like a smoke alarm going off. Now he could tell how pissed off his mom was, because she wasn't yelling. Danny knew from experience it was the absolute worst kind of yelling there was. Because she was speaking in such a low voice, he could only pick up bits and pieces of what she was saying. "Don't lie to me, Richard. Sally saw you last night." His dad had his head down. "Can't be invisible, not in this town," she said. His dad taking it all, the way they'd taken all his yelling in practice. "Not the children's fault that you're still hungover the next night." He said something back now, but must have mumbled it because Danny couldn't hear a single word he was saying. Her voice came up a little. "Yes, you can," she said. "We went over this already. You have to." Danny could see him shaking his head, the head still down, acting as if he were the kid who'd done something wrong now. He were the one trying to act sorry. Finally, his mom said, "Quit drinking. Now, or leave. No goodbyes, no travel team. No Danny. Just leave. It'll be better that way than letting your son be the last one to find out what a drunk you are." She left him standing there, the ball bag still over his shoulder, and walked straight down the middle of the court, while her streak of light streaked for the car, thinking as he ran about the magic they were supposed to make this season, wondering just when the magic was supposed to happen exactly. Chapter 17. Everything his mom had said to his dad must have gotten through to him, because he was back to being the dad Danny always thought of as the good Richie by the time they played their next game against Hainesboro. It's what you were always looking for from your parents, Danny had decided a long time ago, that they would show up with their good selves most of the time, in a good mood, not tired or pissed off about something at work, or hungover, just happy with you and the whole world. The rest of the time, when their evil twin showed up, you just had to ride it out. His mom drove him to Hainesboro, which was about an hour away, as far as they had to go in the Tri-Valley League. Danny couldn't tell whether it was because she wanted to see a whole Warriors game from start to finish, or because she thought she still had to police his dad. "You didn't have to come," Danny said. "I love sports," she said, and he couldn't tell whether she was the one being sarcastic or not. When they got to Hainesboro Middle School, his dad was on the court, moving around in his tin man way, shooting around with the O'Brien twins and Oliver Town and Will. He was even joking around with Will again. "You been in the weight room?" Richie said to him. As he did, he nodded at Danny and winked. "You want to touch these guns, coach?" Will said, flexing his biceps in a bodybuilder pose. Will was just making fun of his own skinny self. He knew everybody was in on it, that his arms, from wrist to shoulder, were about as thick as the lead in pencils. Richie said, "They look more like cap pistols to me." Will tried to look fierce as he kept staring at his right bicep. "You do not want any of this," he said. "Trust me." When Colby showed up with Dr. Danes, Richie made a point of working with her in the corner, defending her with his arms up in the air, showing her how to get her shot against taller players. Even Colby Danes, tall girl, was being asked to guard players taller than her every single game. It was funny, Danny thought. Just not laugh-out-loud funny. Not funny the way Will Stoddard was, because Colby had always been tall to Danny from first grade on, the way Tess was taller. She was tall even when you put her up against most of the boys. She was tall when they'd have fool-around games in basketball or dodgeball or capture the flag at recess. She still looked tall to him when the Warriors scrimmaged against each other. Then they'd show up for a travel game, and she'd go match up with the forward she was supposed to guard, or who was guarding her, and Danny would watch her shrink in front of his eyes. Against Hainesboro, they didn't even have a size advantage at center. Their guy was even bigger than Matt Fitzgerald. It didn't matter over the first three quarters. This time, they were actually in the game. It looked like another blowout when they got behind by 10 points in the first quarter. But Richie told them they were going small in the second quarter, which meant starting Danny, Bren, Will, and Stephen O'Brien, the better of the two twins, and Colby at center. He said they were going to play kamikaze ball, and they did, pressing after every Hainsboro basket, even pressing after a Warrior miss and a Hainsboro rebound, if they could match up quickly enough. Colby was smaller than their center, by a lot, but she was a lot quicker, and started beating him to rebounds. A girl doing that made the kid look as if he wanted to take up another sport. Every time Colby would get a rebound, the Warriors would run and keep running, and Danny was dishing on the break, and by halftime the game was tied. Richie stayed with the same group to start the third quarter, even though he got Oliver and Matt in there for a few minutes later. It was still tied going into the fourth quarter. Middletown 28, Hainsboro 28. When the third quarter ended, the Warriors raced to the sidelines, slapping each other five, pounding each other on the back, feeling like a real team, maybe for the first time. Danny, playing his best game, having assisted on just about every single basket they'd scored, was breathing hard in the huddle, like he'd just run a race, and gulped the red Gatorade that Richie handed him. As he took the bottle, the two of them locked eyes. His dad made a small fist. "Settle down now," Richie said. "It's not enough to just be in it. We're here to win it." He looked around, talking to them in his quiet voice again, the one that had gotten their attention from the start. Who knows? Maybe he was the latest grown-up to crack the code on that. "Don't change anything you're doing because it's the fourth quarter," he said. "Get back as fast as you can. Push it up as fast as you can, okay?" They all nodded. "Same group that ended the quarter," he said. "Now bring it in." He put his big hand out, and then all these small hands were on top of it and each other. "One, two, three, defense," he said. The Warriors yelled that out now. They were the ones doing the yelling and came firing out of the huddle. Danny scored the first basket of the fourth quarter on a two-on-one break with Will. He was on the left with the ball, Will to his right. All game long, Danny had given the ball up on plays like this. The Hainsboro kid between him and Will expected Danny to do that again, especially coming at the basket on the left side. The Hainsboro kid, a forward, all arms and legs, Danny was only worried about the arms right now, backed off at the last second going with Will. Danny slowed up just slightly, as if getting ready to make his pass. Then he put it into another gear about 10 feet from the basket, imagining himself exploding to the basket the way big guys did when they were going to throw down a dunk. Pictured himself doing that and flying. Laid the ball up with his left hand. Definitely not his strong suit. But he put it in the exact right spot on the backboard, in the middle of the square behind the rim, got what one of the ESPN announcers always called the kiss. The ball dropped through, and the Warriors were ahead for the first time in the game. Hot dog. Danny turned around as soon as the ball was through, looking over to his dad, pointed out of bounds, his face asking the question, "Keep pressing?" Richie waved his arm hard, like a traffic cop, his face saying, "Damn right." The Warriors stayed right in their faces. Hainsboro hung in there. With 2 minutes to go, Danny dusted the blonde kid guarding him, the one with the long mullet haircut, crossed over on him at half court, the single crossover, not the double, and fed Will for an open 15-footer, which he drained. They were ahead by two again, 38-36. Mullet head got loose when Bren didn't switch and threw in a long one from his butt. They were tied again. Colby missed from the corner. Mullet head missed. Will missed. Still tied. With 30 seconds left, their big guy got away with shoving Colby on a rebound, got the ball, had a wide open layup until Colby grabbed him from behind. Two shots. He made the first, missed the second. Hainsboro 39, Middletown 38. Richie called time. "You do not have to rush," he said. 30 seconds in basketball is longer than church. Forget trying to run the play. Will, Bren, and Matt, you guys go over and stand on the left wing. We're going to give the ball to Danny and let him and Colby run a little two-man," he grinned, then said, "two-person game over there on the right. Colby, do whatever you can to get open. Step back from your guy like you want to shoot, and if he bites and it takes even one step toward you, bust it to the hoop, okay?" Still talking to them in the quiet voice, but as excited as Danny had ever seen him. "Dan, just read the play. If she's open, get it to her. If the kid guarding you, the one with the Barbie hair, turns his head,
you blow by him. Will, after Danny and Colby make their moves, you be a bailout guy in the left corner. Bren, you come behind Danny after he does whatever he's going to do.
What about me? Matt said.
As soon as somebody shoots, you crash for the rebound. Just don't foul anybody.
As they broke the huddle, Richie put a hand on Danny's shoulder.
You can do this, he said.
Is this the fun? Danny said.
I'm pretty sure.
The guy guarding Colby didn't bite when she stepped out on him. When she ran for the basket, he ran right with her step for step. Nothing there.
But she called for the ball the way she was supposed to, and Mullethead turned his head for 1 second, and as he did, Danny crossed over to his left hand and broke by him and into the clear in the lane.
At first he thought he was going to have a clear path to the basket, but Will had run to the corner too soon, and not deep enough into the corner, which brought his guy, a Hawaiian-looking guy, into the play. The Hawaiian-looking guy left Will and came over on Danny. Danny could hear Mullethead yelling, "Switch! Switch!" even though Will's guy had already done that. 8 seconds left. 7. 6. Danny wanted to dish one more time to Colby, who was wide open now in the left corner, just because his first instinct was always to give it up. But he was worried that there might not be enough time. He was going to have to shoot it before the Hawaiian guy was in front of him and before Mullethead got back in the play, the passer having to put it up. He was 2 steps inside the free throw line when he released the ball over the Hawaiian guy's long left arm, which suddenly seemed to be made of elastic, which seemed to keep growing like he was a comic book guy. Danny released the ball in front of him, the way his dad had been teaching him, not off the shoulder, and felt like he'd put perfect rotation on the ball. Saw the last of the time disappear from the clock behind the basket as the ball came floating down toward that basket. Saw the ball catch a piece of the front rim, but softly, bouncing just slightly as it settled on the back of the rim, hanging there for what only felt like 3 or 4 hours, as if making up its mind about how this one was supposed to come out. Then it fell off like it had rolled off the end of a kitchen table. Hainesboro 39, Middletown 38. Final. His mom kept trying to cheer him up on the ride back to Middletown. He had to give her that. Somehow he felt like he was with some smiley-faced nurse trying to make him feel better about being at the doctor's. "Come on, it was a great game," she said, "even if it didn't come out the way you wanted." "You think?" She had let him sit in the front seat. Technically, they both knew he didn't weigh enough, wasn't big enough to get out of the back seat yet, even though he was 12 and just about everybody his age was sitting in the front seat with their parents. But she had said, "Ride with me today. I want the company." As if she knew making him sit by himself in the back today would make him feel worse than he did already. "You guys looked really good in the second half," she said. Danny, sitting there with the ball in his lap, said, "Great."
"I would think," she said, "that a game like this would have you excited about the rest of the season."
"That might be the only chance we have all season to win a game," he said.
"Get 'em next time, right?"
Danny turned to face her.
"Mom, you want me to stop trying to cheer you up now?"
"I'll clear the dinner dishes for a week and load the dishwasher if you'll stop trying to cheer me up."
"And take out the trash?"
"Mom."
"Okay, okay, I'll stop."
He went straight up to his room when they got home. Noticed when he got there that he'd left his computer on, again. The IM box was up there and waiting for him, along with a message from Tess. Contessa 44.
"Hey, you there? I heard about the game."
Danny thought, "God bless America." It was one of his mom's expressions when she wanted to swear. "God bless America. The air traffic control guys couldn't track airplanes the way kids his age track travel basketball in Middletown." He heard the doodly-doo now. A new message. Maybe she had radar tracking him, knowing he was back in his room. Contessa 44.
"Come on, you must be back by now from Haynes Underwear, Burrow."
He walked over and shut off his computer and cranked up PlayStation 2, then proceeded to stack one of his teams on NBA 05 with all the best guys. Duncan, Iverson, Shaq, McGrady, Kidd, LeBron.
The guys on the other team were all scrubs. He was going to get a sure thing somewhere today. God bless America, why hadn't that stupid shot fallen? He had let everybody on his team down, and he knew it was his team more than anybody else's. There wouldn't even be a stupid team. His dad wouldn't even have invented the Warriors if he hadn't gotten cut from real travel. Real travel, he thought. As Will liked to say, ain't that the truth? I need you, his dad kept saying. Don't you quit on me, his dad had said. Then, when he had a chance to make one stupid shot to win one stupid game, he couldn't measure up. He got up suddenly, shut off his game, cranked up his computer, ignored another IM from Tess, he'd explain to her tomorrow why he hadn't felt like talking, and Googled up the place where he could watch his dad dribble out the clock against L.A. in that championship game. Watched again as young Richie Walker was in complete control of everything, the clock, the game, himself, his team, the other team, the moment, like he was the one alone in a driveway. He didn't choke. Maybe you only got one non-choking point guard per family. Maybe that was it. Then he shut down the computer for the night, hearing one more IM jingle before he did. Tess, for sure. But he didn't want her trying to cheer him up any more than he did his mom. It was definitely a girl deal, wanting to put a Band-Aid on the whole thing. He didn't want to feel better tonight. He wanted to feel like crap. He wanted to remember what this felt like so that maybe, 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 maybe he wouldn't let everybody down next time. Danny remembered listening to his mom on the phone once, talking to one of her friends, saying that the best thing about youth sports was that an hour after the game ended, most kids couldn't even remember the final score. Not this kid. Not this score. Hainesboro 39, Middletown 38. Final. God bless America. Chapter 18. His mom was meeting Will's mom for a girls' brunch after church on Sunday. She asked if Danny wanted to be dropped at the Stoddard so he could hang with Will while she and Molly Stoddard went into town. He said no, he wanted to meet up with Tess at McFeely Park. He changed after church into jeans and sneaks and last year's shooting shirt from sixth grade travel, then grabbed his ball, knowing he'd get time to shoot around because Tess was always late. "Why don't you show up a few minutes late? Then you don't have to wait for her." Danny said, "Me waiting for her? That's part of our whole deal." "Oh," his mom said. "Sometimes I forget I was a 12-year-old girl once." "Duh." "But if you and Tess go into town, you'll have to carry your ball with you." "So?" "You don't mind? I like carrying my ball with me." She sighed. "And I know nothing of significance about 12-year-old boys," she said. When they drove through the high arch that was the entrance to McFeely, she said, "You seem to be feeling better today." "Only 'cause I couldn't feel any worse." "I know we've gone over this before," she said, "but basketball isn't a matter of life and death." He smiled to let her know he was playing and said, "No, it's much more serious than that." She said she'd pick him up in front of the candy kitchen at 4. Then she called out the window that she loved him. He waved goodbye as if he hadn't heard. You never knew who might catch you telling your mom you loved her back. He heard the bounce of a single basketball as he came up the hill toward the big court at McFeely. He couldn't see who was up there right away. He was too short. The hill was way too steep. But as he got near the top, he gave a little jump and saw that it was Ty Ross. Danny had told Tess he'd meet her by the tennis courts. He turned one last time and saw she wasn't there yet, kept going toward the basketball court. Ty didn't look up until he heard Danny bouncing the ball at the other end of the court. Having just come from church, he wasn't sure whether he should be praying for stuff like this, but he was praying hard now that Ty Ross didn't really hate his guts. Maybe there was a way they could talk basketball with each other, the way he talked basketball with his dad when neither one of them knew what else to say. Danny thought, what would guys do if they couldn't speak sports? "Hey," Ty said. "Hey."
Danny could see his fingers sticking out of the top of what looked to be a pretty light cast, one that had more writing and graffiti-looking squiggles on it than some of the subway cars he'd see going past Shea Stadium when he'd go to a ball game there. It was pretty cold out, down to the high 40s, his mom had said, but Ty was wearing a Knicks orange sweatshirt with the sleeves cut up to his shoulders. Black sweats and brand new sneaks that Danny would have been able to spot a mile away. The new LeBrons from Nike. Ty turned away from Danny and pushed a simple layup toward the basket with his left hand, making it look like shooting with that hand was the most natural thing in the world. Holy crap, Danny thought. He looks better shooting with his weak hand than I do with my good one. Danny stood at half court, holding his favorite ball, as Ty stepped back with his, same model, an infusion, and made the same shot Danny had gagged on against Hainsboro. He's better than me at basketball with a broken wrist. Yo, Danny said, changing the conversation up a little. Ty turned. Then Danny just came out with it, knowing he'd better do it now before he lost his nerve. I'm sorry, Danny said. I'm so sorry about what happened. I've been trying to tell you. Ty raised his right hand, his way of telling him to stop, forgetting that it was the hand with the cast on it. I know, he said. Danny kept going anyway. Teddy had cheap-shotted me right before with an elbow. Then he did it again under the basket, and I just reacted and gave him one back. But I never meant... I know all that, Ty said. You had to drag things out of him the way you did with Richie Walker sometimes. Danny had been reminded of that, just hanging around with Ty in his room that day. Ty Ross was really good at a lot of things. Excellent at a lot of things. But conversation wasn't one of them. How do you know? Danny said. Teddy's been telling everybody I did it on purpose. Ty said, his name should really be Teddy Moron. Thought you guys were buds. Not anymore. Because... Danny dragged the word out the way Tess did sometimes. Because once I stopped feeling sorry for myself, I knew you weren't the guy he wanted me to think you were. Ty smiled. He's the guy he wanted me to think you were. Danny bounced his ball in front of him, left hand to right hand to left hand, feeling better for the first time since he'd missed the shot against Hainsboro. Maybe it was seeing Ty with the cast on his wrist and realizing things weren't so bad after all, that missing a game-ender wasn't an epic tragedy. Danny said, "Who told you about what happened before you fell?" "Tess," Ty said. "You guys talk?" Ty laughed. "Now we do. My mom thought I should try something new while my wrist was getting better, something not sports. We decided on that photography course at the Y, on Wednesdays?" Danny nodded. "The one Tess is in." "The first one was last Wednesday. She grabbed me as soon as it was over, said I was going to listen to something she had to say." Ty made a whoosh sound. "Man, she's got this way of getting you to do what she wants you to do." "You think?" "Anyway, she told me what happened. And that I couldn't blame you because she wasn't going to allow it." "She's the best-looking girl our age in this whole town," Danny said. "But she's already got some mom in her." Ty said, "You think?" He flipped another left-handed shot toward the basket, missed. The ball bounced away from him. "I got it," Danny said, passing Ty his ball while he retrieved the other. "I'm supposed to be meeting her here," Danny said. "I know." Danny smiled, imagining a cartoon light bulb going on over his head. "She told you to be here." Ty shrugged. "She said you'd expect her to be late." Tess Hewitt, secret agent girl. "She said she told you 12, but wouldn't be here until 12:30, Ty said. "You want to play horse?" "I can't shoot well enough left-handed," Danny said. "Course after yesterday, I'm not even positive I'm right-handed anymore." He told Ty all about Hainsboro 39, Middletown 38. "You'll make the next one," Ty said. "That's the way I always look at it." He nodded at the basket. "I'll shoot lefty, you shoot righty." Danny said that if he lost, he was definitely quitting basketball. Ty said fine, they could both take up photography. They played horse and talked. Ty said he didn't really know how fast his wrist would heal. Said he hoped he'd be able to get in a couple of games before the playoffs. In the Tri-Valley, he said, you didn't have to set your official roster until the week the playoffs began. So even if he hadn't played at all, his dad could still have him on the roster. When they were both at H-O-R-S, Danny said, your dad know you're here, by the way? He's out of town on bank business. My mom brought me. What would he do if he knew? Yell. Ty twirled the ball on the tip of his left index finger as effortlessly as Richie Walker did. He's not so bad, really, my dad. He just tries too hard. With sports? With everything. Danny said, he doesn't seem to like me very much. I don't think it's you, he said. It's the whole thing. You, the Warriors, your dad. My dad likes to be the biggest guy in town, like he waited his whole life to be the biggest guy in town. Now there's this bunch of little guys. His voice trailed off. Danny shot and missed. Ty shot and missed. Down the hill, Danny could see Tess getting out of her mom's Volvo station wagon. Danny dribbled to the spot where he'd missed against Hainsboro. Not that he was still fixed on that or anything. Then he shot the ball a little higher than usual, higher than he had yesterday, and hit nothing but net. Sure, today he hits nothing but net. Ty missed, then missed the extra shot you get at the end of the game. Good game, Ty said. That, Danny said, knowing he was getting off the kind of pun Tess usually did, is a left-handed compliment. Ty gave him a low five with his left hand as they heard Tess say, fancy meeting you boys here. Tess, in a ponytail today, with some kind of long red sweater, one that went nearly to her knees, with the sleeves pushed up to her elbows. Tess in jeans and Timberland boots, the Timbies looking as new as Ty's LeBrons, carrying her camera. She snapped one of Ty and Danny standing there next to each other. You two look like a team to me, she said. I wish, Danny said. The three of them went down the hill, destination Candy Kitchen. Danny didn't even mind walking between them, looking like their little brother. Chapter 19. They decided to spend Christmas together, like a real family. Or, Danny figured, as close to a real family as they were likely to get. His dad said he probably wouldn't get up early enough for the opening of presents, telling Danny that the only part of him that was still a ball player, that still worked, was his body clock. But he said he would be there for Christmas dinner, the roast beef dinner with all the trimmings that Allie Walker had promised them, followed by strawberry shortcake for dessert, Danny's favorite. According to his mom, dinner would be served at what she called a soft 2 o'clock. What does soft mean? Danny asked. It means that showing up on time for anything other than basketball has always been real hard for your father. Christmas was still Christmas when his dad wasn't around, when it was just him and his mom. But after all the waiting for it, all the anticipation, it sometimes seemed to be over for the two of them before Christmas Day was even over. They'd go over to have Christmas dinner with friends sometimes, families like Will's and Bren's that had 4 kids each in them, and there would be presents everywhere, under the tree and all over the house. It was smaller with him and his mom. Always came back to that. Danny didn't know how much teachers made at St. Pat's, or anywhere else for that matter. Even if his mom told him what her salary was, he wasn't sure he'd understand where it fit into the whole grand scheme of things. The one time it had come up, a couple of years ago, his mom had said, I make more than a year's allowance for you, and somewhat less than Michael Jordan used to make. Then she laughed. She always went for a laugh when the subject was money, but Danny usually thought it was like the fake laughter you heard on television shows, even when nothing funny was happening. Her heart never seemed to be in that, the same way it never seemed to be in dating the guys who would come to the house to pick her up sometimes. There were some subjects Danny tried to avoid at all costs, and one of them was this, whether his mom would ever get married again. What? She said when they talked about that one from time to time. And give up our life on Easy Street? Then she would fake laugh again. Danny could never figure out, on Christmas Day or any other day of the year, why they weren't on Easy Street. His dad had made it to the NBA, even if his career hadn't lasted very long. Those salaries he did know something about, even if he didn't know squat about what teachers made. And he knew that if you were a first-round pick, even back when his dad was a first-round pick, you got a 3-year contract, guaranteed. So there had to have been some money in the family once, right after he was born, when his mom and dad were married and they were a real family more than one day a year. Where had it all gone? That was one he never asked either of his parents about. How it worked out that his dad didn't seem to have any money left, and why he and his mom were living in the flats at 422 Easy Street. Tess had helped him shop for his mom. She had asked him exactly how much money he'd saved up from allowance and birthdays, and he told her. Tess said, "I just need to establish our price range." "I'll give you the money and you get her something," Danny said. "I hate to shop. You know I hate to shop." "You'll love it," she said. "Shopping with me is like playing a round of golf with Tiger." She took him to Wright's, the only jewelry store in Middletown, and helped him pick out a silver charm bracelet. "Done," Danny said when they'd agreed on the one they both liked, thinking how quick and painless the process had been, jewelry shopping with a girl 4 days before Christmas. Tess said they weren't quite done, and then somehow talked the woman behind the counter into throwing in a single silver charm, a basketball, for an extra $5. The bracelet, with the tiny ball hanging from it, made his mom cry after he insisted she open her present first. Really cry, as he helped her fasten it on her wrist, his mom telling him it was the most beautiful piece of jewelry anybody had ever given her, ever. Then she hugged him and started crying all over again. He was never going to understand girls of any age as long as he lived, he was sure of that. But he was going to run upstairs the first chance he got and IM Tess and tell her that they'd hit the stinking jackpot with the charm bracelet. It was his turn to open then. Real jackpot. His mom had bought him a new laptop, the first brand new laptop he'd ever had in his life. A Sony Vaio. And even a dope about money knew it was way out of their price range. Way, way out of their price range. "Mom," he said, when he was able to get some words out, imagining how buggy his eyes must have looked to her as he stared at the inside of the box, afraid to even lift the unit out of there. "You can't, we can't." "Can," she said. "Did. Done deal. Merry Christmas." But nothing, she said, helping him get the white styrofoam out of the box so they could gently remove the computer. "Been doing a little extra tutoring on the side." "You ask me, it must have been a whole lot of extra tutoring." "Whatever," she said in her dippy mall girl voice, as a way of ending the conversation. Then, in her real voice, about as soft, Danny thought, as the snow starting to hit the ground outside the living room window, the Christmas snow she seemed to have ordered, his mom said, "I knew that if I made enough money on the side, I could buy myself the kind of Christmas morning face I'm looking at right now." She hugged him again and then had him open another box, the one that had the new LeBron James Nikes in it, the ones like ties he had described to her after he got home from McFeely that day. The sneaks were so cool, coming right on top of the laptop, that he managed to act excited while he opened the remaining boxes, the ones with the shirts and sweaters and new school khakis in them. Then the two of them went upstairs to his room and unplugged and unhooked the old computer, somehow managed to follow the directions, the two of them giggling their way through the whole thing, until they had the Sony up and running with Microsoft Word and email and IM and passwords and codes and all the rest of it. When they were done with that, they attached his old speakers to it. His mom kept telling him, "Do not lose anything." He said he was being careful. She asked where he was going to put the box and the directions and the warranty. "His closet," he said. "Oh, no," she said in Freddy versus Jason fright. "Anywhere but there." She left him alone then, knowing he was twitchy to IM Tess and Will and the rest of the Danny Walker network, telling them about his stuff and asking about theirs. Then he could hear the Christmas music coming from downstairs as she went to work in the kitchen. Nobody liked Christmas music more than his mom. She started playing it in the house and in the car the day after Thanksgiving. always telling him that if Christmas shopping had started, it was time for Elvis to start singing Blue Christmas. Even when the presents weren't as jackpot big as they were today, even when Christmas wasn't as big as it felt like today, his mom loved Christmas as much as he did. New laptop on the desk.